on. Yes. That wasn't the right verse, was it? In 2001, in the winter, a guy called PJ Taylor and myself started doing a thing called Big Week Out. Wow, that's loud. We started doing a thing called Big Week Out. It was with this church. I was a youth pastor at the time. And for those of you that were around, you might remember I did it by cancelling our drop-in. Do you remember that? Which I remember some folk not being very happy with me about. Because the drop-in had been a successful thing that this church had done for some years, and I cancelled it. I cancelled it so that 15 of our young people, which is not many, by the way, so two churches combined for 15 young people to do a week of service in our local area. If you know PJ and if you know me, we winged it all week. We thought of this as a great idea. We had not organized anything until that week. And then in that week, we just scrambled for projects, places to serve. We rang the council up, we rang the schools up, we rang everyone up that we could think of and did as many things as we could imagine in one week. PJ and I organised all the equipment, we handled all the registrations and we did all the cooking. We ran all the games, we preached, we did everything. And if you know PJ and I, that's exactly the way we roll. Good friend of the Esselbarks over here, great guy. And anyway, so we did it. And we thought that was fantastic. Another church around the corner, St. John's Uniting. So that was Rosefield Uniting that PJ was at. Glenys Hartwick at St. John's heard about it and said, I'd like to join you next time you run it. So we ran it in January 2002. And what is now the council chambers was actually originally a disused cinema. So we were looking for a place to use. I'd seen inside that cinema. I thought, that is awesome. Because essentially it was like just a messy warehouse at the time. So I rang them up and said, can we use that messy warehouse for a week? And they said, sure, we're not doing anything else with it. So we used Unley Council's disused cinema and we had 30 young people involved. A little bit more organised because Glenys was organised. She did all the cooking, which is much the relief of everybody else. But we hit a problem. And it's a silly problem because the way it goes is with Big Week Out, we can only transport 4 young people plus 1 driver. So at the most, 4 young people, 1 driver. And we had 30 people. And we had 4 service events a day. And we had wanted to give people variety of service over 5 days. Those logistics were a little tricky. We'd not thought about that until we were starting to fill out the rosters for everybody. So what ended up happening is we would get there early in the morning, probably 7:30, get organised, go out, serve all day, come back, run a night program, everyone would leave at 10 o'clock, and we would start rostering from 10 for the next day. And then we would finally get it done by 2 o'clock in the morning, go home, roll that again next day on. 30 people took us like 4 hours to roster every night, just getting all the pieces to work together. It was ridiculous. And if we couldn't figure that out, Big Week Out would not have gone any further. I learned very early in ministry that effective ministry requires you to be organized. It's just a little lesson I had to learn. I may not look like it, but I have a Polynesian background. And if you know anything about Aboriginals or Polynesians, they never rock up to anything on time. There is a reason for it, because the person you're with or what you're doing now is more important than what you're going to. Who you're with is much more important than who you're going to. So my first ministry job, I would regularly rock up between 30 minutes to 1 hour late for staff meetings. Because the person I was with was more important than the meeting I was going to. My boss at the time, his name was Frank Arlen. He took exception at that kind of behaviour. He said, the rest of us are all here on time. Why can't you get here on time? Because what you're doing is you're letting us down. You may feel like you're going to let the person down that you're with, but you're actually letting a lot more people down. I may have mentioned, I love spontaneity. In engineering, we'd sit in our morning lecture at engineering, and all my mates would say to me, Jason, what do you want to do today? And I'd say, I don't know. Do you feel like seeing a movie? And they'd say, yeah, let's go see a movie. So let's go see a movie. And it was based, I don't know why they looked at me, but they based how many lectures we were going to skip by my choices on whether we're going to see a movie or go to town or. We skipped a lot of lectures, let's just say. I like spontaneity. I didn't like organization. But I learned that if you don't get organized, you're not effective. But that's not the drive when you go into ministry. That's not why you become a pastor. You don't become a pastor to organize things. You become a pastor because you want to see this command that Jesus gives. Go and make disciples lived out. Go preach. Go see people come to faith. See them change. See them grow as followers of Jesus. Equip people. Empower people. Release. That's what you're in it for. But what I discovered was when you go and God's in it and then things grow, then you got real problems. You got real problems. When things grow, the challenges come. So I had to grow. You see that with Moses in Exodus 18. It starts off, we didn't read it, but the first bit starts off that his father-in-law comes and visits him. As far as I can tell, the last time his father-in-law seen him, he was a shepherd looking after sheep. Now he's come back, he's coming to see what Moses has been doing with his life, with his wife and two sons. And Moses shows him around what must have been a vast encampment of people. Look at what God's done. He's set us free from Egypt, the superpower of the day, destroyed Pharaoh's armies. And here we are encamped in a desert, fed by God. Jethro, it says in chapter 18, was delighted to hear about all the good things the Lord had done for Israel in rescuing them from the hand of the Egyptians. And he says, praise be to the Lord who rescued you from the hand of the Egyptians and of Pharaoh, and who rescued the people from the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all the other gods, for he did this to those who had treated Israel arrogantly. So he's shown off everything that God's done. It's been amazing. I mean, if you're talking about growth, setting the Israelites free from Egypt is unbelievable. They go on to worship and they go on to sacrifice and enjoy everything God has done. We'll pick up from this passage today. So now Jethro sees Moses sitting back enjoying the fruits of all this success. And what does that look like? It looks like pain. All that dynamic life has come to this dreadful halt as it bottlenecks around one person. Moses sits alone with what must have been an epic line of people, making judgments between parties. And Jethro says, that's not good what you are doing. It's ineffective. It's too much. Jethro is a management consultant, isn't he? He sees the problems. And he whips up what I think is a quick role description for Moses. Did you hear Moses' role description? Teach the people. Select good men, trustworthy men who hate dishonest gain. Appoint them as judges. Release them. Now your main job is to teach them. That's what he says to Moses. Your main job is to teach them and go find other people to take responsibility. He sets up a system and a structure. all super exciting words. This is what Moses signed up for, isn't it? But Moses is bogged down in the detail of judgments. And he needs Jethro to come and say, you could do this way better. This will kill you. Sets up a system and a structure that enables increasing effectiveness. You actually see that kind of pattern repeated in the early church. We know that they went and God brought great fruit. 3,000 come to faith on the first day, another 5,000 a bit later on. They're looking after the poorest people. And then there's some complaints. All that growth, and it turns out that the 12 apostles who were desperately trying to do good for the most vulnerable people, the widows and the orphans, in chapter 6 of Acts, there's some complaints. The Greek Jews, the Hellenistic Jews, complained about the Hebraic Jews because their widows were being overlooked in the daily distribution of food. So the 12 gathered all the disciples together and said, it would not be right for us to neglect the ministry of the word of God in order to wait on tables. Brothers and sisters, choose 7 men from among you who are known to be full of the Spirit and wisdom, and we will turn this responsibility over to them, and we'll give our attention to prayer and the ministry of the word. This proposal pleased the whole group. They chose Stephen, a man full of faith and of the Holy Spirit, also Philip, Procurus, Nicanor, Timon, Parmenas, and Nicholas from Antioch, a convert to Judaism. Then they presented them to the apostles, who prayed and laid hands on them. Can you hear how they had the same problem? All this life, this incredible growth, and it's weighing the 12 down. They cannot keep up with it. And what they want to do, which is see vulnerable people looked after, they're not able to do. And they realize, actually, our prime responsibility, our role description here, is to teach the word of God and to prayer, and we need others to help sort this, helping the poor out. 7, what we now call deacons, 7 people were selected to do that job. We hear what kind of difference people like those 7 deacons make in Romans chapter 16. Where Paul, finishing his letter off, he talks about a lady called Phoebe. I commend to you our sister Phoebe, a deacon of the church in Seneca. I ask you to receive her in the Lord in a way worthy of his people and to give her any help she may need from you, for she has been the benefactor of many people, including me. This lady, Phoebe, a deacon, a person who uses her organizing and her, actually it turns out she's got some wealth as well, her wealth to help. And Paul says she has been such a good person for me. A patron is the other word that he uses of her. Her support has helped me do this ministry. Can you see what difference people like Phoebe and the deacons and Jethro and those leaders that are appointed can make when things grow? That if ministry grows, it comes with new challenges. It comes with the challenge of how do you mobilize more people? How do you harness needed resources? And in the people of God, there are people who are good at that. Good at it. I don't know if Moses was good or bad at it. He must have been okay, because he'd managed to mobilize armies, and organizing an army is no small thing. But I wonder if he was too close to it. I understand what Moses might have felt like, which is, I just need to get today's job done to survive till tomorrow. You're not thinking long term. He needed a Jethro to come into his life to help him see how to get out of that hole We need people who are organized people, who are administrative kinds of people. We need people who can use resources to maximize ministry. We need it. As church grows, you need structure and support. Otherwise, it all falls in on itself. A guy called Colin Marshall, he wrote a book called Trellis and the Vine. And I love his image around this. He says the vine is like ministry gospel work. It's got the life in it and it bears the fruit. That's what the vine is like. But if you don't put a vine on a trellis, it all falls in on itself. Suffocates and kills itself. It needs a framework, it needs structure and support to help the vine grow. It's a great image of what we're trying to do. As our things grow, you're trying to put the necessary support to bring out the life to help it keep growing. Now, I've seen churches respond to these kinds of people in two ways. The first way is it overvalues them. Organizers get primacy. Your church becomes about procedures, control, money, and committees. I've seen churches like that. I definitely have seen churches like that. Where the person who holds the money says, you can't do that. To the pastor who has actually got hopes to pursue something in terms of ministry. And not even because, in fact, the church I've got in mind, they said, you can't do that, not because we can't afford it, but because I don't want you to do that. Like, oh yeah, right. That's wrong. That's certainly wrong. And in fact, Colin Marshall wrote the book Trellis and the Vine. He's an Anglican, Sydney Anglican. And if you know anything about denominations, boy, are they great at committees. And if you know anything about large denominations, wow, they're great at organizing the life out of a church. So he was making a comment that the trellis had, the work on the trellis had taken over the vine. That as he looked out at churches, he could see that churches are all about their committees and their procedures and their policies and their property and their money, and they'd forgotten how to go and make disciples. That's why he wrote the book. Is he wanted to say to people it's not all about the trellis. And he says that the reason why we make it about the trellis, about organizing and administrating, is because that's easier and less threatening. It's tidy. It's in our control. That's why we make it about the trellis. So that's one response I've seen in churches, is we overvalue it. The other response that I've seen in churches is we undervalue it. That we set it up as it's against the life of the church. It's against everything that's relational and organic. I feel like I battle this one mostly. In our denomination, I'm a freak. All right? There's a few of us. A few crazy freaks who like things being structured. All right? Mostly I feel like I'm surrounded by people who are all into all relational organic. And they fight me. Jason, it's not about system and structure. They fight me. You might fight me. 1 Corinthians 12 says this, that God appointed in the church first apostles, prophets, teachers, then the miracles, then the gifts of healing, helping and administrating. Who wants that gift, administrating? Anyone here got a hand up for, I want administration as my gift? Now, I know Cliff Parkin does. He's a great administrator. But it's not something that you young people want to aspire to be when you grow up. A person who has a gift of administration. I prefer miracles, Jesus. Actually, interestingly, The word administrating, if you look in your NIV, it's not translated that way. It's translated as leadership. That's how it's translated in your NIV. Another translation says, actually, it's leadership that provides for others. It's a particular kind of leadership. It's the leadership that enables ministry, that enables help. And this is, in church, I feel like we undervalue it because we do not want to go from work, which feels so organized and bureaucratic, and come to church so that it could be more organized and also bureaucratic. We don't want that, do we? Just want it to be organic, a community. And I grant you, there is a tension that the Spirit blows where it wills. God will not be controlled. And that is in tension with that organizing need, that as things grow, they need structure, control, order. I just don't feel like they should be taken apart from each other. I think they should be kept in tension. That the life, the vine, needs the trellis, and the trellis knows it's about the vine. Without the vine, there's no fruit. And without the trellis, the vine falls in on itself and there is no fruit. There's no fruit. So for those of you among us who have the gift of administration, and I am praying to God, there are many of you, you need to keep in mind it's not about the administration. You know a church has gone crazy. You know how you can see that? Go into their kitchen. And what are you seeing on the walls of that kitchen? Procedures. You know a church has gone over the line when there are way too many signs on their walls. I've told Bron that already. So I'm working with the Blackwood Hills Baptist property team. Their job is to maintain the property. And I wanted to say to them, how can we talk to each other about the property in a way that reminds us it's about the vine? That it's not about the property. It's actually about the ministry. So this is what we came up with in terms of the property ministry's purpose. The purpose of the Blackwood Hills Baptist property ministry is to manage, maintain, and improve our property as an effective resource for community and mission. I wanted to say to them, if you do your job well, then everything else about community can happen in the building that you maintain. When people don't hurt themselves, when people come in and everything works. One Sunday at Blackwood Hills, it rained. It was while Tim Costello was preaching, and Alan will remember this, won't you? Because the box gutter was blocked and the roof would be about that high as well, the entire wall was a waterfall. It was a little distracting. If they do that job properly of looking after that box gutter, we don't get any waterfalls. And on it goes. You notice these people when they don't do their job. That's when you notice them. By the way, when was the last time in church you heard somebody give administrators a big rap? I'm talking about the invisible people. I'm talking about the ones who help us day in, day out, who get us organized so you rock up and you do not have to think about things. I'm talking about those people. They are my heroes. I will cheer them on. We just got to keep in mind it's about that vine. It's about the ministry. I think in our church, a vital place for us to grow in this is where Jethro identified. Jethro said, deal with the leaders. Find leaders. If you find the leaders, then everything else is going to fall in place. See how he did that? If faithful, capable men. In our church, I think we need great counsel, people who know how to govern an organization well, that you trust, that I trust, that will lead us well. Not everyone loves that. I know that. But we need them. We really need them. And I'm very thankful over the last 2.5 years, our council have worked so hard to make sure that our church is in a better place. So thank you, every council member. The other one is in our ministry leadership. We need faithful, capable ministry leaders who can sustain and support ministry so that it grows. We need that. We need organized people. Our church is right at the point of pain. It's a point of pain. We sit around 350 people. Up to 250 people, a pastor can normally keep up with meeting you, talking to you. Over that number, it's super difficult. Maybe not possible. And we're over that number. And we're now into a place where the way we used to run church will not work if God keeps adding to our number. And I guess we just make a choice, don't we? We go, well, do we stay where we are? Or do we expect God to grow us? Because if that's true, I'm sitting in the pain. I am like Moses, sitting alone going, I'm making way too many judgments here. We're at that point. Granted, the building only takes 350, so maybe that's our answer. But we're at a point where actually we need ministry leaders. We need teams. We need people who are great at moving us forward. In 2003, Big Week Out had gone from 15 to 30 to 70, and by 2003 there were 150 young people. If we had trouble organising 30, imagine what kind of pain there would have been with organising 150. Do you know why we didn't have that pain? Because of a guy called Eric Love and another guy called Bryn Roberts, and they were smart computer programmers. And they wrote a computer program that could take everyone's preferences and back in those days, believe it or not, run it all night and organize everyone's roster. Now, this program is still used today, 18 years later. It's a bit smarter now. But Bryn and Eric were a lifesaver to me. And then there was Rachel Bowie. Rachel Bowie was an accountant and knew how to handle money. I don't like handling money, especially if I'm doing everything else. I have a habit of leaving money in the wrong places. So Rachel sorted out the books for us. Then there was Andrea. Andrea was a studying graphic design and very talented artist and made all of our marketing stuff happen. And then there was Glennis, who organised all the kitchen and the food. And then there was PJ and I running around like crazy guys. These people meant that what could have been a massive headache was shared, the load was shared. It grew even more, grew to 300 young people the next year. So we thought that's way too big, we divided it into four regions. Then we had a small team that organised all the regions. It's now been going for 18 years. I wrote a ridiculous amount of stuff down because I didn't want to run it for the rest of my life. So I wrote it all down and gave it away to all these people. And then for 18 years, it's been still going on. Last year, the year before, I hadn't had anything to do with Big Week Out for about 5 years. I'd given it to SU to run, had nothing much really to do with it. And they invited me 2 years ago to come and speak. And I was so fascinated because they were telling me things I'd written down. They were doing things that we'd talked about organizing 10 years, 15 years prior. And I had nothing to do with it. This pattern has been consistently repeated in my life. God has put me into things. They have grown way beyond my capacities. Because of that, I've drowned and thought, let's get organized. God has added computer programmers, graphic designers, accountants, organizers into my life. And together we've sorted something out so that it's lasted a really long time and been very good for many people. Another thing I would say is Encounter Youth. Encounter Youth was pretty disorganized. It took 11 years of my life to sort out with a team of people. It's been running 20 years now. A conservative estimate is that it has impacted 200,000 young people in our state. I can keep going. What I want to tell you is we are few. We're not many. But when you take what God has given us and you focus it and you get it all channeled in one direction and folk among us have those skills, when that happens, way more than you ever believed could be possible. So I am a champion of anybody in this room today who says, actually, that's what I'm good at. I'm good at that kind of thing. I'm a big fan of you. And we need you. Our church needs you right now.